from 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, welcome to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you.
Hello and welcome to The Art of the Matter. I'm Sharon Gamble. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buscelli Wallerap Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
And I'm Travis DiNicola. Today I'll check out what's going on at the University of Indianapolis's Art Gallery.
I'll find out about not one but two glass art exhibits at Garfield Park.
And then I'll learn about a new effort that rediscovers the connection between art and science called the Da Vinci Pursuit. Plus, we'll have our arts calendar we call...
What'll we do? All that and more right after the latest news from NPR. The Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center Gallery is located on the University of Indianapolis's campus on Indy's south side and features work throughout the year by students and faculty, as well as by locally known and nationally renowned artists. Travis DiNicola sat down with the art department's chair, Jim Vway, Mark Rushman, the gallery's new curator, and artist Jim Kemp, whose pottery will be featured in the gallery from January 16th through February 8th.
Jim, Vway, let's start with you. You're relatively new to the University of Indianapolis as the department chair for the art department. Give me the broad overview. What's going on down there, and why would you hire a guy like Mark Rushman to manage your gallery?
Well, we have a really great gallery space, and we just wanted to...
And you know I mean that in the best way possible.
Well, yes.
I take it that way.
Thanks, Mark.
We have this great gallery space, and mm-hmm. I think we haven't been getting the traffic we like. I think there's a lot more that could happen there. Mm-hmm. And so by bringing somebody like Mark Rushman in, we can bring more, foot traffic to that gallery and really utilize the space. Plus, he has a lot of great contacts of exhibitions he can bring in as well.
Excellent. And the space is in the Crystal DeHaan Fine Art.
It's in the Crystal DeHaan Fine Art Center. It's mm-hmm. on the west end of the building, mm-hmm. closest to the corner of Hannah and Shelby.
And it is a really nice gallery space.
It's a very nice gallery space.
Number of shows over the years. I also like just walking through the halls of that building because there's always a lot of interesting art on the walls, not just in the gallery, but in the classroom or the halls between the classrooms.
And that's another thing that people don't realize about our university is that we have a great permanent collection. And so if you walk through any of the buildings, you'll find pieces from that permanent collection. You walk through Crystal DeHaan, all floors of that building. You walk through Esch, especially the first and second floor of the new edition.
Mm-hmm.
And we're working our way into the second edition. Schwitzer Center has student artwork. As students graduate from our institution, they leave us a piece of artwork and we hang it in there so people can really see what our past students have done. And then with Dee Shod, he over the last few years has really done mm-hmm. a lot with the sculpture walks. There's a lot of sculpture on campus to see too, which is something we're continuing to grow
What are the main areas of focus for your students at University of Indianapolis?
Main areas of focus are VCD, studio art with drawing, painting, ceramics, digital photography, pre-art therapy, and art education and pre-medical illustration.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize about the pre-medical illustration.
Right. That's a new program that we just added.
Very cool. That's great. How's that going so far?
It's a really hard discipline to get through, so we only have a couple students at this time.
Mm-hmm.
It's only been on the books about a year and a half, maybe.
Okay.
So it's a new one, and it's one of those things where it's a pre-degree where it's leading you to graduate study somewhere else.
Wow. That's pretty cool, though.
Yeah. So there's a lot of great things going on.
And about how big is the department overall in terms of faculty, students?
We have 6 full-time faculty, 6 to 8 adjuncts, and mm-hmm. then about 100 students and about 15 graduate students.
Okay, excellent. Yeah. Very cool. Always great stuff going on down at University of Indianapolis. And, Mark, it's great that you've joined them. I know you've been involved with them in the past, but now taking over running the gallery down there.
I have. I've taught classes there in the past, and Jim asked me to come on board and run the gallery for him, and I feel very fortunate for that opportunity.
Well, and I was kind of teasing you a little bit at the beginning of the show only because, for many, many years running the Rushman Gallery, which had to be the coolest and most influential contemporary art gallery in the city, and it's something that a lot of us miss. So it's great to have your voice as a curator, having your eye back, seeing what you're picking out.
Well, thank you. I hear that a lot, and I'm doing a lot of the similar things that I was doing with the gallery. Of course, I'm not focused on sales, but it's more about curating exhibitions and giving people a reason to come into the gallery. And I think we have a pretty strong lineup coming up.
I want to stop you there for a second, because that's a pretty big shift, not having to be focused on sales.
That's a major shift.
Yeah. In some ways, free you up a bit.
I'm still working in the fine art business in the way of consulting and as a private dealer. So I still wear that hat. But the gallery gives me a unique opportunity to curate shows, work with artists, and the focus is not sales. So it's all about serving the students, serving the public at large, and putting on the best possible show I can in the gallery setting.
Though I know that often pieces that are on exhibit at University of Indianapolis are for sale.
So, yes, they are. But there's not an emphasis on it. Right. Things are for sale, yes.
Yeah, directly benefiting the artist, but not necessarily. And it's not like you're trying to raise money for the gallery or anything like that.
Exactly.
So tell me about your vision for this then.
Well, it was actually a lengthy conversation with both Dee and Jim. Mm-hmm. And I think Jim summed it up very well, the idea of reaching out more to the larger community. Of course, we want to serve the students. We want to give them exhibitions that are relevant to what they're learning. But we also want to ramp it up a bit and make it a more exciting and engaging experience, and actually reach out to the community and have people that maybe otherwise wouldn't have come into the gallery, give them a reason to come and visit the university.
Sure, sure. I know it's always a little bit tricky sometimes getting people sort of, you know, a little bit farther south and stuff, but I would imagine you've got to see a lot of support just from all the great things that are going on in Fountain Square, which is really not that far away from U of I.
It's very close, and we plan on capitalizing on that as well. And again, Jim talked about, you know, the sculpture walk and all the other activities that are going on there, and it's our feeling that if we have quality works there, if we provide a good experience, that people will make the trip.
Yeah, well, definitely. Art worth going to see, including the 30 years of Jim Kemp pottery. Jim, great to have you in our studio. Thanks so much for being here today. Your show opens up January 16th. How'd you get connected with these guys?
I went to school there, graduated in 79,
okay.
So that's kind of the connection. And a couple years ago, I thought I needed to do this show, and so anyway, here I am.
Now, I didn't realize you had gone to University of Indianapolis. Were you studying pottery at the time? Were you an art
Yes,
major?
I was okay. an education major, and yeah. I did everything but student teach, so
okay.
I got my degree without student teaching, and just got a bachelor's.
And you've been a professional ceramic artist now for, well, 30 years is the title
years.
Of your show. tell me a bit about the style of your work. What sort of work do you do?
It's wheel thrown, red earthenware clay, and then I spray and airbrush a clay glaze mixture on the surface. Then I fire it, so it's a dry look. It's not shiny or glossy, and that kind of gives it a... With the airbrushing, it has kind of a softness with the hard materials, but generally decorative pieces. And
that sounds kind of unusual with the airbrush. I mean, using that technique, is that something you've been doing for a while?
I have been doing it for over 20 years.
Yeah.
And I used to have a line of functional wear,
okay.
and worked for another potter along the way. And but I've been at some point I wanted to put airbrushing and 20 years ago there wasn't a lot of bright color in ceramics, and I kind of went that direction with it at a lower temperature and different, rather than high fire stoneware, I'm doing lower fire earthenware. So it gives me a lot of latitude to play with different color combinations and textures.
Now, where's your? Do you have a home studio? Or
I live in Greenwood, so I mainly make my living doing art fairs.
Yeah.
At Broad Ripple, Talbot, Penrod, and Town.
Sure. Yeah, I know. I've seen you around a number of those and stuff. Yeah.
Do about a dozen a year.
I'm working through that. And where else besides the art fairs and stuff is your work available?
That is it right now. I used to have about 10 galleries that had it, but I was shipping off my best work and for half price and running out of stuff at art fairs, and thought it doesn't make sense. So as I get older, I'm not going to Florida this year for the first time in 25 years, and So maybe I will look into galleries as a...
Or any online business? I mean, do you ever like that sort of thing?
No.
But okay, so this coming up show, this retrospective of your work, will it be that? Will it be, I mean...
Well, it's going to be old work. I have one woman who's collected, she's bought like 100 pots off me over the years. She'll be kind of the base for it. And I've had a photographer for 30 years, and I've got a pretty extensive slide collection that I've digitized, and it's been, you know, all digital work in the past 7-8 years, but so I've come up with a series of posters, and which will show, I make say 4 or 5 different pots, teapots, plates, different sizes, jars, bowls, boxes, and so the posters kind of show progressions or regressions over time and of the using the same theme. And
Mark, what's it like for you been working on this, putting this show together with Jim?
It's been an interesting experience. Just from what you've heard right there, it's a wide variety of things.
Yeah.
The fact that he's contacted a collector that has such a wide swath of his work.
That's pretty cool, which I mean makes it kind of easy in some ways, I would imagine, and maybe a little tricky in others, but
well, we'll curate the show.
Yeah.
It'll be that's what I mean, it's going to be an interesting experience. We'll curate the show, and then the digital images that Jim was talking about, that's kind of a twist too, because most people don't associate his work with you know, photo images, 2D images and things like that. So
sure.
I think the very range of things that you're going to see are going to give people a good reason to come to the gallery, and at the end of the day, that's what the purpose of the show is.
Jim Vway, let me ask you, how important is it to be able to have an alum, a student from 30 some years ago, come back and be able to be featured in a show like this?
Well, I think it's great because it shows that our students are successful, and that somebody like Jim, who's been really successful over the years doing the art fairs and such, and really made a living from creating art, shows that those students today who may be a little hesitant about being studio artists, that there's somebody that's really successful and has done it. So don't shy away from that just because people might not think it's easy to make a living, which is not, but Jim shows that it's possible.
Well, it's possible. And for Jim Kemp, let me ask you, now, will you have an opportunity to chat with any of the students, or is that something that's sort of been worked into this, or just more informally?
If they come to the opening.
Well, we might be able to work a lecture into it as well. As you said, Jim, I think it would be great for them to have an opportunity to talk with the artist, and not only about the work, but also about his career as a professional artist.
Sure.
And nothing could be more inspiring to a young artist than to talk to somebody who is actually doing it, making a living, and being successful.
Excellent.
And our gallery exhibitions have a really good record of the students showing up.
Yes.
So they will be there in mass to see that. And so hopefully they will take the initiative to talk to him. And so, the other issue is just getting more people from the public to come in. But our students are always...
Okay, so the Jim Kemp Show runs from January 16th through February 8th with an opening night on the 23rd at 6 o'clock from 6 to 8. Mark, give me a brief rundown of the other shows you've got coming up this semester in the gallery at the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center.
Well, February 20th through March 16th, we have the illustrations of Crystal Melson and Charlene Hsu, two international illustrators, one based out of Montreal and the other out of Singapore. And then March 26th through May 11th, we have Tandem Press, a contemporary fine art print studio out of Madison, Wisconsin.
Yeah, that's a very, very well-known publisher. That's that should be a really interesting show, I would think.
I've worked with them over the years, and it's an opportunity for the students and the public at large to see just a tremendous collection of fine art prints made by some of the leading artists working today.
Travis DiNicola with the University of Indianapolis Art Department Chair Jim Vway, Art Gallery Director Mark Rushman, and artist Jim Kemp. You can see Kemp's work in the 30 Years of Jim Kemp Pottery exhibit at the Crystal DeHaan Fine Arts Center Gallery, located on the U of I's campus. More information about the gallery and the Art and Design program is available at art.uindy.edu, art.uindy.edu. You're listening to The Art of the Matter on WFYI 90.1 FM Public Radio.
Here in the dark of winter, Garfield Park offers the chance to see sparkling works of glass art in not one but two exhibitions. Sharon Gamble learned more from Brent Glick, head of the Maryland K. Glick Center for Glass at Ball State University, Leslie Meyer, manager of the Garfield Park Art Center, and Emily Wood, horticulturalist at the Garfield Park Conservatory.
Glass and nature, not necessarily a natural partnership, not necessarily two things you'd put together at a cocktail party. How did this, where did this start? Brent, I'm looking at you. I have the feeling you might be the ringleader here.
We had heard from the Garfield Conservatory that they were interested in hosting a show of glasswork in the conservatory. And so they had contacted both myself and Arlen Bayless, who teaches the glass program at Anderson University.
Mm-hmm.
And both of us kind of responded, and we got together with Fritz Nerding and worked on, out the details on how to move forward with the show at the conservatory.
So for people who, it's hard to imagine any of our listeners might not have been to the conservatory, but Emily, would you describe it to us?
Certainly. I mean,
it's just spectacular.
The conservatory is part of Garfield Park. It's Garfield Park Conservatory and Sunken Gardens. We're the oldest park in the city. It was originally built in 1915. We have 10,000 square feet under glass of tropical collection, which is where the glass show will be hosted.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have 4 acres outside, which will probably not be too spectacular in January through March, but it's worth noting.
It'll be blanketed in snow, except for Super Bowl weekend.
Exactly.
So you're, is the idea that the glass will complement the plants that are in the conservatory or in some way be inspired by, the glass pieces are inspired by?
I think both those things, and also it could be contrary
to
nature. So it could call into question either the placement of the plants or the plants being kind of outside of their native environment, or just talking a little bit about the taxonomy and how the plants are kind of divided into the way that they're presented at the conservatory. So.
So it might be, it might even be something instructional. It might be glass illustration of pistil and stamen and stem.
It could be that literal, or it could completely veer from that and kind of play with the context a little more.
Cool. Leslie, is this the first time glass has been a presence in Garfield Park?
Yes. I will say at the Art Center, in the 3 years that I have been there, I have hosted 4 pieces of glass.
Mm-hmm.
The Art Center, if you've ever been there, is, you know, big tile floor and cinder block walls, and breakable things make us a little nervous sometimes. just
they
with
don't
the
blame
nature
you.
Of the space, and we have a lot of kids and families and running through. But when the conversation came up between Fritz and Brent and Arlen about hosting an exhibit at the conservatory, they had also visited our space, and so I was involved in some of that discussion and trying to find out how we could support and partner to make what they were doing at the conservatory even bigger and provide multiple experiences for people that were visiting the park. And so we actually went through a couple of different ideas before we landed on, after Brent and I spoke some more, working with the Indiana Glass Artists Alliance and hosting works that they were creating in conjunction with the 50th anniversary of Studio Glass, which will be celebrated this year. And so our exhibit is a complement to what is happening at the conservatory, and I think will offer visitors, regular visitors to Garfield Park and first-time visitors, a really unique experience to see glassworks in this beautiful natural environment of the conservatory, and then to see glassworks presented in a more museum-like environment on pedestals and a little more traditional way, where they can sort of study the pieces and learn a little bit about the birth of Studio Glass into its current art form.
Which I'd like to learn more about. How did that get started? Was there a technological advance that that happened that made Studio Glass blowing possible?
Actually, the contemporary craft movement was kind of synonymous with a lot of people coming back from World War II on the GI Bill.
Okay.
And so what happened is the way that Studio Glass came about is the ceramicist about 15, 20 years before that, before the Studio Glass movement in the 70s, in probably the early 60s, late 50s, the ceramicists decided that they wanted to start having ceramic studios in their own backyard.
Hmm.
And so what ended up happening is a lot of glassworkers had a start as ceramicist, and they were intrigued by the material and wanted to do the same thing, where they pulled the glass environment out of the factory and were able to do it in a small kind of atelier or studio environment. What's kind of interesting, though, is that in the studio glass movement, we have made more of a move back to some of the things that are in the factory. So, for instance, a lot of people are familiar with Chihuly, and the thing that's interesting about Chihuly is there was a whole group of people in the 70s that were setting up their own studios. Well, Chihuly went to Venice on a Fulbright and saw that, you know, really the team atmosphere of making work was way in which a lot of work could be made efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
And so he kind of reinstilled that team method of working. So you kind of have a hybridization of that right now.
What's changed about glass blowing technology or techniques over the centuries?
Well, the thing that's amazing is if a Roman glass blower from the turn of the era, from about 0 or 50, mm-hmm. Would walk into our studio, they'd be readily able to sit down and make just about anything that we make with the tools that are there. They'd recognize just about everything that was there. What is technologically moved forward is the materials that we use to, say, heat up the glass or to anneal the glass, which means allowing it to cool down. You know, that's something that they wouldn't recognize. So instead of having a layer where somebody has to stand there and move a piece from 1,000 degrees down to room temperature over several hours, essentially we have computer-controlled units that do that.
Whoa, cool. So. But coloring the glass is still done the same way?
Exactly the same way. It's all metal oxides.
That's so cool. How did you, I have to ask a very pragmatic question here. Mm-hmm. How did you figure out how to make your piece of the show shatterproof? Not to make a bad pun, but I mean, how did you figure out how to display these pieces and make them family-proof, kid-proof?
Well, at the Art Center, because we've had, our current team has had kind of 3 years under our belt of playing with exhibits and setting up exhibits in different ways, we recognize that the Art Center is many people's first experience a mm-hmm. lot of times in an art gallery or a museum. So we use a lot of tensa barriers so that people are sort of guided through the space. They know where they can walk and can't walk, and we don't have to worry about going around and saying no all the time. It's
sure.
set up so that you have a really positive experience. So you'll see a lot of tensa barriers and pedestals, and we use a lot of museum wax to hold pieces down on the pedestals. And then we'll offer an exhibit guide, and then any of our staff will be available to take people through. And because we have a front lobby presence where we kind of know who's coming in the building at each time, and we also offer free family activities on the weekends in a program called Arts for All, where you'll get to kind of play around with making your own tissue paper stained glass windows.
Hmm.
We're aware of who's coming upstairs, and so we take tours, and it's that hands-on approach, I think, that keeps everything safe in our space. And the entire time we've been there, we've never had an accident.
She's knocking on wood
glass.
Under the counter as we
I
say
am.
That, knock on glass.
Yeah.
So Emily, what is it? Do you feel? How do you feel? How does this work emotionally for you? I mean, people are kind of invading your space. You're a horticulturalist. You're used to the plant materials. Are you a little? Is it exciting, or is it a little like, hey, don't bring that stuff in here? I mean, I'm putting you on the spot, but I'm curious.
No, we have several show spaces inside the conservatory, so we're used to bringing exhibits in and building shows around them. We have kind of two different types of landscape inside the conservatory, one that's a little more movable, a little more flexible, or that we can dig out and kind of move around. And then we have our very permanent collection, which are, of course, you know, 30-foot trees or something like that,
sure.
which are going to stay put. So we're excited to bring in new features into the conservatory because we do like to keep it constantly different and new, so that it's for the people who regularly come back, there's always something new to see. So we're very excited about it. We are going to be, of course, taking care that we aren't damaging any of the permanent collection or the rare collection inside the conservatory, but I think everyone's pretty sensitive to that, so we're not too worried.
And I have to put in a plug. It's a it's a beautiful place to go any time of year, but especially in a on a cold winter day, you go in there, and what's the average temperature?
Well, we usually keep 80? It around 70 or 80 if we can, depending on if the sun is shining. We're very dependent on sunshine, but if the sun is shining, it can easily be 80 or 90 degrees in the conservatory.
Plus, then, you're playing with glass inside of glass and thinking about the sun shining through all of the windows that comprise the conservatory onto the glass pieces. How are you lighting this show up?
It's all natural light.
That makes good sense. You're having a couple of events on an upcoming Friday and Saturday. Let's hear about those, because that's kind of the big splashy kickoff.
Certainly, our event at the conservatory is titled Neo Natural, and the event proper runs from January 21st through March 18th. We will be closed on February 20th, but we are hosting a preview party, which is an exclusive party. It's $5 per person, but we will have light refreshments, and we will also have live music. So that will be kind of an exclusive preview for the entire show. And we'll be doing things in conjunction with the Art Center. So I'll let Leslie talk
about
that.
That's a treat, yeah.
The preview will be held on the evening of the 20th. And then on Saturday evening, the 21st, the Art Center will actually be open during the day from 9 to 4, just our regular operating hours. But that evening from 5 to 7 is our opening reception for the Indiana Glass Artists Alliance 50th anniversary of Studio Glass.
That was a mouthful.
So that exhibition will open that night, and we will also have live music that evening. And to complement what we're doing on Saturday, the conservatory will be open as well. So if you come out to see what we're doing at the Art Center, you'll be able to step into the conservatory. And the Saturday evening event is free. The Art Center tries to run all of its opening receptions and Arts for All program for free. And that's something that we feel that we're able to do, because we also run classes and some other things like that. So the Saturday evening event will be free, and you'll just be able to see the exhibit at the conservatory. There's nothing special going on that night, but you can also come over to the Art Center and see the exhibition that's opening there.
Will any of these pieces be for sale?
Yes, I believe almost all of them will.
Cool. And as we're having this conversation, people are still in the studio blowing glass as we speak. But have you seen pieces? Do you have favorite pieces you've seen yet? I'm looking at Brent because
he's the... I've sent a couple down to Emily and the folks at the conservatory. Uh-huh. There's an architecture grad student that made some really interesting pitcher plants. We have an undergrad that made a giant cicada shell. So it'll be interesting to see where we can put that within the conservatory. We have a grad student that has made these, for the lack of a better word, pods that look like these giant broken seed pods that'll be put throughout the space. So I think there's going to be some pretty exciting work.
Sharon Gamble with Brent Glick of the Marilyn K. Glick Center for Glass at Ball State University, Leslie Meyer, manager of the Garfield Park Arts Center, and Emily Wood, horticulturalist at Garfield Park Conservatory. You can see Neo Natural from January 21st through March 18th in the conservatory, with a preview party with light refreshments and live music on Friday, January 20th from 6 to 8 p.m. for $5. You can get more information at garfieldgardenconservatory.org. Again, garfieldgardenconservatory.org. And you can also see the Indiana Glass Art Alliance exhibit January 21st through February 26th at the Garfield Park Arts Center. There will be a preview there with music and light refreshments served on January 21st from 5 to 7 p.m. You can find out more about this exhibit at garfieldparkindy.org. You get that? The one exhibit at garfieldgardensconservatory.org and the other at garfieldparkindy.org. All right, go to it.
Hey, Travis.
Yes, Sharon.
Have you been able to keep your New Year's resolutions?
Of course I have,
Wait,
Sharon.
What were they?
To see more arts events, right?
Mine too.
Mm-hmm. We'll give you some ideas about how to do that on the calendar we call.
What'll we do? What do you got?
Go. There you go. Well, let's see. How about some Dance Kaleidoscope coming up over the next couple weekends from January 19th through the 29th. Two weekends of DK with world premieres by David Hochoy and Cynthia Pratt and Nicholas Owens. It's the Super Soul, Motown, and More series of concerts that they are doing at the IRT, featuring lots of great soul music with Aretha Franklin and Jackson 5 and Stevie Wonder. And there's also a really kind of cool new thing that they're doing to celebrate 40 years of Dance Kaleidoscope, their 40th season. They are having a Hochoy Truffle for sale.
I heard about this. Can you give us any, since you have some connections to the chocolatier, can you give us any hints?
It was created by Elizabeth Garber, the best chocolate in town, the Ho Choi Truffle, and it sort of harkens back to David's roots in Trinidad, and it features pineapple and rum and coconut.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes, in dark chocolate. So proceeds benefit Dance Kaleidoscope, and they'll have them for sale at Super Soul, which is coming up again the 19th through the 29th. That should be a ton of fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Wow. So last month, on December 21st, the celebrated composer and educator David Baker turned 80, but he's still celebrating because 80 is kind of a big deal, and he's very famous. He essentially created the field of jazz studies and has been responsible for literally generations of great jazz musicians and jazz educators. There is a January 21st concert at Bloomington's Musical Arts Center celebrating his 80th birthday, and it features all sorts of faculty members and current students and former students of David Baker. And you might see if you can still score a free ticket by dropping an email to jazz@indiana.edu, jazz@indiana.edu. Again, that concert is January 21st at the Musical Arts Center in Bloomington.
Something that just sounds like a ton of fun, bringing together two of our favorite things, Sharon, which would be food and the arts, and is also a benefit for Second Helpings, is their super, as in S-O-U-P, Super Bowls 2012. It's a ceramic bowl sale and soup tasting event taking place at Second Helpings on January 28th from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m., so a great day to go for lunch. $5 admission includes 5 soup tasting tickets, and they're going to have soups from Regina from Art Bistro and Greg Hardesty from Recess, as well as Circle City Soups, and from the chefs for the Colts and Butler University, as well as the Columbia Club and Pogue's Run will be making soups there as well, which will be a lot of fun. But something else they'll be doing is they're also going to have celebrity autographed bowls. And so you can bid on bowls from Chris Isaac and Vince Gill and Amy Grant and the Naptown Roller Girls and a whole bunch more. So again, this all takes place at Second Helpings on January 28th from 11 to 2 p.m. You can get tickets at the door or more information at secondhelpings.org. And of course, the proceeds all go to Second Helpings' work to eliminate hunger in Indianapolis.
Speaking of food and the Super Bowl, I'm just saying, here is a brilliant, brilliant thing. Have you heard about the 46 sandwiches?
Yes,
so this is so cool. Super 46 sandwiches. 46 sandwiches from around the state, from all kinds of restaurants, from elegant to very down home, have been nominated, all the way from falafel to steak sandwiches. And they've been nominated to be part of the list of Super 46 Sandwiches. You can get the full list and maybe print it out and keep it in the car so you can drive around and check things off the list as you consume them. Go to super46.com. This was this was created by the Indiana Office of Tourism Development. Super46.com to find out about the Super 46 sandwiches.
You know what else you can do, Sharon?
What?
Because I found this out over the weekend. If you go to a rest stop on one of our interstate highways,
you can get the guide.
You can get the guide there, and they have pictures and the whole guide there. Okay, so now something completely different. A play put on by NAMI, the National Association for Mental Illness, and their local chapter in Indiana is putting on a play called Nobody Needs to Know. It's a one-act play about disarming the stigma of mental illness, and it stars a cast of consumers of mental health services. It is free and open to the public, taking place at a variety of places over the next few weeks. Saturday the 21st with the Merrimack Players in Martinsville, Thursday the 26th at Christian Theological Seminary, and then Sunday the 29th at Irvington United Methodist Church. All the performances are followed by a facilitated discussion. Very interesting stuff, definitely worth checking out. And if you want to get more information, visit NAMI Indianapolis' website at namiindy.org. That's namiindy.org.
Attention, people who like to do handcrafts. There is something coming up that you might be interested in on January 28th. There's a winter day of sewing at the Slovenian National Home of Indianapolis, which is at 2717 West 10th Street.
It's a fun-filled day of sewing or any other crafts that you like to do, crocheting, knitting, needlepoint, whatever your craft of choice happens to be. It's a $30 charge, which will include a light brunch and lunch and the opportunity to hang out with other crafters, make some new friends. There's enough space for you to bring whatever needlework or other work you want to do. There's a stage located at one end of the room where the Winter Day of Sewing will take place for a fashion show. Doors open at 8 o'clock and the day will end at 5 o'clock. And you can get more information at 796-8643, 796-8643. A Winter Day of Sewing. What a great way to pass a dreary winter day. Get together with other creative folks. And this is open to people of all ages, men, women, children, as long as you have a craft that you want to pursue.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, another great thing to do is to go check out some live theater, and there's a whole bunch of plays opening up this weekend, including the Dixie Swim Club, which is taking place up at Beef and Boards Dinner Theater, and then August Wilson's Radio Golf is going to be taking place at the IRT. That opens this weekend as well. It's the last play of his 10-play cycle, and then also at the Phoenix Theater, Current Economic Conditions, it's a new play. And it's sort of about when the empty nest turns into a bit of a cluttered nest, with adult children returning to live at home with their parents, as many of us have in the past.
Hey, Sing Uprising is coming up next week on January 21st. That is one of those great indie folk series concerts. It's going to benefit a good cause. It's essentially an open mic night. Bring instruments and a copy of Rise Up Singing if you have access to one, and you can dissipate your winter doldrums with song. Sing Uprising, family friendly. Bring your family performers, bring your instrument, or just come sit and listen, because audience is needed as well.
Very good. Last thing I've got is just a reminder that, of course, Monday is Martin Luther King Day, and last weekend on Are the Matter, we mentioned all the great events going down at the White River State Park. When you bring a can of food for Gleaners Food Bank, you get free admission to the State Museum, the Zoo, the IMAX Theater, the Idle Jorg, the NCAA Hall of Champions. Also, at Victory Field, they're doing a healthcare screening for blood pressure and glucose and cholesterol from Wishard. A lot of great events that are all taking place down at the White River State Park, but also there's a lot of events going on at the Madam Walker Theater, as well as at the Historical Society and the Children's Museum and the Arts Garden and the IMA and all sorts of great organizations that are taking place and having free admission and special education programs on Monday for Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And we'll be back next week with more things to do on that calendar we call
What Do We Do?
You're listening to The Art of the Matter, a weekly show about the arts in Indianapolis and Central Indiana. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. If your arts organization has an event or activity of which you think we should be aware, please contact us at least 3 weeks in advance. You can write us at The Art of the Matter, care of WFYI, 1630 North Meridian Street, Indianapolis, Indiana, 46202. Or you can email us at artofthematter@wfyi.org. You can also hear The Art of the Matter on WFYI.org.
Is it a museum, an organization, an exhibit, an experiment? A Dan Brown novel? The Da Vinci Pursuit has a goal of rediscovering the connections between art and science to ignite the imagination, stimulate thought, and provide enjoyment in a unique way. Travis DiNicola spoke with President and CEO Mark Kiesling to find out more.
Mark, welcome back to Art of the Matter. It's always a pleasure to see you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, Travis.
Thank you. So the last time we talked to you, we were talking about something completely different, but now you've got a new project going on that I am really curious about. It's called The Da Vinci Pursuit, and it's, you know, is it a museum? Is it an exhibit? Is it a program? Is it an idea? So what is it, Mark?
Well, what we have done is we wanted to look at an idea of having a science-like museum in Indianapolis.
Okay.
It's one of the things that I think is missing is for, you know, kind of science museums serve that role for age 15, probably up to 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't have that here. We have a lot of things like the Children's Museum, things for younger kids. So,
and of course, there are some science exhibits at the Children's Museum,
absolutely,
or at the State Museum.
But typically not for that older audience.
Yeah.
So when we looked at it, we started trying to figure out, well, what would that might be? And so in a way, we
ended up coming up with because of economy that was tough, because buildings and resources use up a lot of money, financial money and contributions, that what if we did a museum without walls? What if it wasn't in a building?
But a virtual museum, an online museum?
No.
Not necessarily,
no,
right?
It's actually installations.
Okay.
So if you could imagine a sound kind of park, out in the Greenway, or you might encounter something along the Monon Trail. You might encounter something in one of the Indianapolis parks that is a crossover between art and science. So the other thing that we're doing, and that's hence the name Da Vinci, is the art-science crossover.
This is really fascinating to me. I mean, the first time that I heard about this, and we had talked about this earlier, I was just really intrigued by this idea of not being limited essentially by the four walls, but often, and I had referred to a virtual museum. I mean, a lot of the time what people think of as museums anymore, it's either going to be, the four walls or maybe an online version of a museum. And yet this is neither, can certainly take advantage of both of those things. But it's sort of almost like playing along the idea of like the pop-up shops or the food vans, if you will, or food trucks, sort of like what is available and where it is to take advantage of the opportunity. Is that a
right,
fair?
Yeah, well, I think that's a fair. I think the food trucks we hadn't actually thought about, but that's similar. In other words, it's a little viral like that. Other words, you don't know exactly where it's going to pop up.
Okay.
It could tend to pop up almost anywhere at different times. And the pursuit part is that people chase it. So they're chasing down parts of it, but it has a legacy part too. So there are things that after an event happens and something's created, usually we're hoping and proposing a work of art would be created that has a science basis. But when that's created, per se, that's an exhibit, then it's left. Okay, so then it has a legacy beyond. So there's something that's left in a location until
so there could
it dies
be permanent
natural
things
death.
That
yeah,
could be,
yeah. I don't think that my museum background says there's no permanent exhibits, but things all have a life. But it is like that, and so it gives us a couple of opportunities that we don't have in a typical walled museum. My background being in museums, I've had a lot of.
But you've also had a lot of theater experience,
yes,
too.
That
and,
too.
And this it sounds in some ways almost like
correct.
Street theater or
it is.
There's
and,
a theatrical element.
Right,
it.
And we're looking at arts, not art and science, but arts and science.
All the arts.
So, so we're looking at all the arts and how do they come together. So a good example is we've got a harpist, professional harpist here in town that you know.
Melissa Gallant.
Yep. And she's coupled with actually one of the professors, Jordan Munson, who's at IUPUI, who did the first iPod orchestra in Indianapolis. Some people may have seen that performance.
Okay.
But they've coupled together, and what they're doing is they're going to give a new sound to the harp. And he's able to take that electronically, her sound, and as she plays the harp, take that and go off with that and make a whole new sound for Melissa. And it's also going to control visuals behind her.
Huh.
So there'll be a visual display that her harp is producing.
Now, physically, where will this take place?
Well, our first one is on February 3rd, Super Bowl, the first Friday Super Bowl.
Right.
In the Wug Studio, his Wug Lacus.
Yes.
Studio and Garage,
yes.
Which is in the Circle City Industrial Complex.
It's a great place. We're a big fan. It's a little tricky to find if you haven't been there, but it's just off of Mass Ave and 10th Street in that huge, enormous building that's about the size of 15 football fields, and part of it's painted blue, and actually, once you find it, it's not that bad. But
yeah, and there's like 11 or 13 galleries in there.
Yeah, it's a great new space, really upcoming space for a lot of artists that are using it both as gallery and studio space over there. So this performance will be at Wug Studio.
And we're going to have several other different people that are actually working on some things. We've got some people working with robots and some other people that... So we're going to have a mini Da Vinci Pursuit in the hallways of that building on that evening.
Cool. Okay.
So that the public can get a sense of what we're doing in microcosm. So it's kind of hard to describe these ideas, what's it going to look like, what would happen.
Sure.
That's an opportunity for the public to actually see what we're going to do.
Okay. And so that'll be sort of a one-night preview
type
of thing. But that really will be your first, sort of exhibit show.
Yeah, and that's kind of experience. Our opening, per se, of that. And then things will start popping up after that.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some locations identified and some people that have got some pretty cool ideas. And those will start to pop up along.
So let's go back, and I want to talk a little bit more, maybe a little bit more abstractly, actually, in terms of what it is that that you're doing with art and science, because part of what you say I've seen on your website is it's about rediscovering those connections mm-hmm. between art and science. What does that mean to you?
Well,
because if it's a rediscovering, then obviously they've been there before.
Well, sure. The reason we even came up with the name Da Vinci Pursuit was Da Vinci, Michelangelo, some of the great artists personify the idea of art and science being together. You know, mm-hmm. there wasn't this separate field of science separated from art. The experimentation back and forth, science informed art, even in some of the practices of the frescoes that they did or some of the painting techniques.
They're really just different tools of trying to understand the world.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And so somewhere along the way, when we separated lots of things into different subjects, discrete and specialized, I think we lost some of the brilliance that was there when you have an artist and a scientist in one crossing between and then mm-hmm. making those connections. Now, I don't know how many Da Vinci's we're going to pursue, you know, create out of the process. The teamwork connection, the connections between an artist and a scientist, that's a way of us getting even, we can't manufacture, you know, a new Da Vinci in one person, but we can get them to collaborate. So, you know, Melissa's thing is a good example. She's mm-hmm. always wanted to have a different sound. She finds herself doing lots of weddings, but she'd like to have a different offering. Mm-hmm. And so to be able to have a different offering, she's always dreamed that, well, what if my harp made some other noise?
Okay.
But she didn't know what to do with that because she's not involved in the science and technology of doing that. And then Jordan had always had this idea, I want to make a harp sound, but he doesn't know how to play a harp. So by listening to both of them independently and then connecting them, what we've been able to do through Da Vinci is
so
to put them together.
You can really be a resource for artists and creative scientists. I would imagine, I mean, that sort of will be part of your role. But you also mentioned earlier about, you know, sort of the role of science, traditional science museums with four walls in other cities are often sort of targeted to teenagers and a little bit mm-hmm. older and skewing that way. Is that something that you anticipate? I mean, really trying to grab that audience of you know, sort of 15 and up creative types and scientific types?
Yeah, I think that one of the things we look at in the way we do our work is that we're trying to grab an audience that doesn't have a lot of options.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, where do you go, you know, except you go to a bar, you go to concerts, you do those things. But where can you just go and have fun,
mm-hmm.
hang out? Now, traditionally, in a bigger city, you know, San Francisco, Chicago, they have a science museum, which becomes a cool place to go.
Or like an exploratory.
Right, and it's not, you know, the Children's Museum, while it's neat, still says Children's Museum.
Right.
So that's not very cool. No matter what anyone tries to do, it doesn't make it
a
cool destination, right?
Sure.
I mean, once you've chosen an age. So the neat thing by taking it out of a building, not being building bound, by taking it out and putting it where it kind of pops up, it's a little like, you know how people will chase a band throughout mm-hmm. town.
Right.
They heard them in one place and then mm-hmm. it's somewhere else. There's a little bit of that nature to this where how do I get involved with that? You know, oh, this is cool. I walked by this on the Mona and I saw it, but I want to be involved in the next one.
Mm-hmm.
Or I want to be involved in the next theatrical event that just pops up somewhere. I want to be involved in the next art event. How do I find that? And then that's where the website allows you to get connected. So it's not only the artist connecting, but that other level is the public connecting, just general people finding out a way that they can get involved in it.
So obviously the website is going to be a big part of this, especially for your audiences,
right.
And that's at thedavincipursuit.com. Social media as well, I would imagine.
Absolutely.
I mean, Twitter and Facebook, you know, have got to be a big part of finding out where the next piece is. But what about for people who are interested, not just in attending, but maybe they have an idea?
Yeah,
they might want to try or
right.
do.
The website is designed to let you deposit that. It's a repository mm-hmm. for your idea. And there's really three sections in that page where you can connect. You really are connecting. One is that you have an idea
mm-hmm.
and you just want people to hear about your idea. Maybe it's even to promote your idea. But the second one is that you really need some support. You got an idea, but I don't know what else to do with this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's kind of neat, but I don't know what I'm going to do. A good example is we've got somebody that has engineered some robotic tank tracks that they think might be good for a wheelchair,
okay.
and they're attractive. But what do I do with that?
Yeah.
Is there some way? So they could post that idea up, and then maybe someone comes along as an artist and goes, gosh, I got a really great use for that, and they connect. And then there's a third place where people who have resources, they have no ideas, but I've got, you know, a million ball bearings in my warehouse. What do I do with them? I sure. can put it up there because somebody might be able to create something unique out of it. It might spawn an idea. So it's really a way of connecting ideas, resources, people, and funding all in a way together as a portal. So you're trying to give people a way to be creative. But often why creativity mm-hmm. ends is that I don't have enough of a large group or enough expertise myself to do it.
Real quick before we wrap this up, Mark, you mentioned the funding part of it. How's that play into all this? Because it is a not-for-profit, right?
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, we have very little overhead, as you can – that's part of the design, mm-hmm. to have almost no overhead. There's a staff of one me. but we view it as underwriting a very small – central overhead, and each one of these being thought of, the best way for the arts community to think of it is each one of these being thought of as an independent commission.
Okay.
So when an idea rises to the top, somebody's yeah. really got something, then and we find a funder that they get funded, the project, the materials get funded, right? And those come and go as there's funding. So we're not building, mm-hmm. you know, an infrastructure that's hard to support, especially in the economic climate. There's so many people competing for the same foundation dollars or whatever.
Of course.
But this allows, you know, this allows our philanthropists in the community, individuals even, to say, oh, I like that art piece.
That's a cool idea.
You know,
I
that's a cool idea, and maybe it's only $20,000 or $15,000 rather than $250,000, mm-hmm. you know, to do a whole exhibit or something. So it allows them to also connect with something very personal that they feel like they sponsored. So you could see these things on the cultural trail. You could see them, you know, so it crosses boundaries. It could be in the parking lot of the Children's Museum. So Da Vinci Pursuit doesn't have really any competition with other organizations. It actually works to enhance what they're doing and to draw that particular audience to that. So that's the other part of the portal.
Travis DiNicola with Da Vinci Pursuit President and CEO Mark Kiesling. To learn more about the Da Vinci Pursuit, visit thedavincipursuit.com. Thanks for joining us today. The music for today's show is courtesy of the Buselli Wallerab Jazz Orchestra from their Heart and Soul album, available through Owl Studios at owlstudios.com.
Please listen to The Art of the Matter again next Friday at 8 p.m. and Saturday at 4, when I'll get a preview of the upcoming season of Cabaret at the Columbia Club.
I'll find out about the new City Gallery at the Harrison Center for the Arts.
And I'll check out the Soho Gallery and Cafe in Carmel. Plus, there'll be our arts calendar we call
What do we do? So please listen next weekend to The Art of the Matter here on WFYI for your information.
You've been listening to The Art of the Matter, made possible by the ongoing support of listeners like you. The Art of the Matter. Your hosts are Sharon Gamble and Travis DiNicola. Today's Art of the Matter was produced and edited by Travis DiNicola. The Art of the Matter on 90.1 FM, Indianapolis.